Hey there, folks. Will Reynolds here, and I'm just reminding you to wake up. We have been in the answers business as search professionals our entire careers, but I think now more than ever, we really need to make that pivot. I've been standing on that hill with my flag saying, we are in the answers business. We are in the answers business. We are in the answers business for years. And this is actually a photo of me sleeping outside. I was looking forward to waking up because I sleep out once a year in November. I'll be sleeping out in a few days from today. Not in San Diego, but in Philadelphia, where it's going to be a heck of a lot colder, to raise awareness and funds for homeless youth. If you got value from this presentation, there's a link in the presentation. You'll be able to go and make a donation. I don't care if it's $5 or $500. I think we can all be a part of doing something about people that don't have the same opportunities that we do. So let's rock and roll. So it's interesting, right? Back in the days of Blockbuster, their CEO was like, these Netflixes of the world, they're not even on our radar screen as competitors. Now, we all look at that and we can laugh and have a laugh at the expense of that CEO and all their hubris. You know, but I tend to boil most marketing down to friction. Late fees were friction. How many of us have been driving to Blockbuster at the last minute trying to drop it off or put it in the overnight box just in time so we didn't get hit with late fees? How many of us loved having to rewind our videos before we sent them back? Or how many of us loved going to Blockbuster just to find out that our top three favorite videos, none of them were in and we had to pick our fourth or fifth? None of these things were fun. They were all friction. But in spite of seeing that, this CEO said, they're not even my competitors. Now, back in time, there was a land of SEO people, and they actually got together and did weird stuff like wear hats and hang out at bars. And the reason why I'm showing you this is because we had no choice in the early days but to get with each other, share our tests and what we were working on to try to figure this out together. And some people just sat, like me early days, and listened to other people talk. But we saw them bantering around ideas on how these things may work, how they might not work, what they had been testing. Okay? Keep that in mind because I believe the search world has changed a good bit. So let's be honest about the Great Marketing Data Disappearing Act. No matter what channel you're in, you have less data than you did just 5 or 6 years ago. And we are the OGs of losing data. Remember that whole not provided thing? Happy 13th birthday, not provided 1% of my traffic. Yeah, right, it was. So, you know, I'm not that gray, man. I got a lot of gray, to be honest with you. But you know what's great about gray-haired people? Old people? We've been around for a long time. We have opinions about our industry. And we have experience. And I'm going to explain to you why those things are so important. But mainly, it's my experience that makes me bullish on AI search. It is not the data that I'm seeing and things of that nature, although I will share some data. But I know there's conflicting data. I am extremely bullish on AI search for one simple reason. The friction. The lack of it. Full stop. That's it. And I'm not going to spend my time trying to explain to people that it's better. I think that's a wasted effort. The idea of me trying to spend my time explaining to somebody why search is worse than chat for answers, well, let me at least show you all so you can be armed with some of the same things that I'm seeing. So the reality is, we don't get the questions our customers are entering in from Gemini, ChatGPT, or Perplexity. Although, I read the Perplexity pitch deck, and it looks like in the future, they may actually give you questions. So if you're partnering with your paid team, you might want to jump on Perplexity early, especially if they start giving you those questions in a world where Gemini and ChatGPT won't. And I know. It's suboptimal. The answers on these platforms change all the time. You know, if you hit refresh, you might get a bunch of different answers. I get that, but we still have to progress and move forward. So the way I'm going to break this presentation down is I'm going to take a look at answers today and how good the 2024 SERP does that. Then I'm going to share with you the metrics, my own metrics that I'm seeing that are making me bullish. And then I'm going to lead with a bunch of ideas on what to do about it. Now, this presentation, I only have 45 minutes. I might be able to go in and actually do some steps at the end on what to do about it to show it to you live. We'll see how the timing goes. All right, so let's start off where I said I would. We're going to take an honest look at SEO. The problem, I think, with the Google monopoly is that it's actually made our jobs a little too easy. Because what we basically have woke up to do for the last 5 or 8 years for many of us is just what I call slightly better SEO. You know, we look at everybody's content, right? And we copy them. We don't put a lot of original thoughts in. What we're looking to do is instead look at semantic search telling us what words we need to use to look relevant so we can win on the search results. And You're going to see I was optimizing for this word SEO RFP a while back, and I actually took a step back and I looked at all these different top rankings, and they all basically sounded and acted the freaking same, you know, the same way to internally link, the same way to do your H1s and headers, the same way to basically do every single thing. They were all basically the same. And I don't know how many of you in this room would have seen my Sea of Sameness post, but that was the catalyst. It was me actually doing SEO as an SME with all this gray hair and 25 years of experience and going, why am I going to allow some semantic SEO tool to dictate to me based on whoever's ranking above me on what's the best way to pick a search agency? Come on, man. No freaking way. So what I also started to realize here is this Google monopoly, it took us away from our roots as SEO people. People don't test anymore. Innovate, we don't try new things. We just look for the checklist, right? And do it slightly better than someone else. And what I learned from this SEO RFP example is when I flushed my rankings and said, you know what, I want to write the content from my perspective and not from some semantic tool telling me the words I need to use, I was willing to sacrifice my rankings. That's a test. And what was interesting is then we went back to the top after losing our rankings because I believe in part information gain had a big amount to do with it. So sometimes we forget how much friction there is with search, and I'm going to remind you of it right now. So when you buy a car, think about all the different things that you're thinking of when you buy a car, okay? Now, imagine all the searches you'd have to do to find them. It's kind of a pain to have to do 20 or 30 searches. And then, you know, let's say you have two different things you're thinking of, SUV, 60,000, three rows. When you get to websites, you've got cookie pop-ups blocking the content. You have companies trying to get you to sign up for an account. Sign up for an account? Why? I want to buy a car like once every 8 years, man. Like, no, thank you. I don't want to sign up. But notice how that sign up is over the content and the answer. That is friction, my friend. And then when I get the answers of the top five, three of the top five, while they were under 60,000, did not have a third row. Tell me, talk to me about hallucinations, my ass. It's a bad answer, period, right? So then if you look at paid, you can see you have Rivian, Defender, Volkswagen, Cadillac, right? Well, Rivian has three rows, but it's 77,000. That's pretty far over my target, right? And then the Defender is actually under 60,000. But the minute you add a third row, it's almost 70. So this to me is all friction. And all I did was put in two things that I cared about. Not all the things, two. Could not get a good answer. And I think everybody's starting to realize this, and the sharks are starting to swirl around Google's dominance in search. And I think we got to be honest. We actually are starting to realize that these results aren't that good. The people that are searching are like, I'm not getting what I used to. Meta, who uses Google and Bing to power part of its websites to kind of fill in gaps for customers, is thinking, man, we're going to work on an AI-powered search engine and get rid of you. We obviously know all about Search GPT or ChatGPT with search, or whatever it's called. And then I also think we all need to be thinking about Apple has the ability to change all these devices instantly. So thinking about what content traffic trends start to degrade the day after Apple does an update is something I think we should all be thinking about. And Microsoft, they're putting Copilot buttons on keyboards. So everybody's kind of circling. And of course, we've got Perplexity here. Now, I went to Bing. Because remember, Bing's going to be the savior. You know, they're going to be the rag backend for ChatGPT, at least for now. And I did a search for something related to CRM and Excel. So I'm looking to build a CRM in Excel. The first three answers have nothing to do with what I asked. So they're not answers. At least I can kind of see in my screen something that's an organic answer. But man, Microsoft has made it really hard to see the difference between the paid results and the organic, especially on mobile. So I clicked on the first result. Nothing about Excel. Second result, nothing about Excel. I hit the back button. God forbid I do that, because now what they've done is given me two sets of site links, which means I can't even see the answers that I thought I was going to get back to. Nothing about Excel, nothing about Excel, nothing about Excel. Then let's just say I didn't get all the answers I needed on the first couple of results organically. Because I can't even tell that these bottom results are ads anymore, I'm going to click on HubSpot, TechCo, Alfia, or whatever the heck it is, and they were all wrong. So doesn't that feel a lot like what I said earlier about Blockbuster? I mean, I'm just getting wrong answers. You know, it's like, welcome to search in 2024. God forbid you can actually find what the heck it is you're actually looking for. I looked at Bing. Look how little real estate they leave for where the answer could actually be for CRM and Excel. And Google, I must say, is a little bit better. But let's be honest, if I had included the AI results here, AI overview, which was suspect, it'd be half. With Bing, it looks to be about like 80% of the pixels are not answering my question. With Google, it's about 40 to 50%, depending on how you look at it. And I think this is true. We wake up, we follow checkboxes more than ever. And we actually loved it. And I think it's time for us to fall back in love with testing and trying new things because it's in our roots. You see, if Google were a person, I'm like, I feel like it would be like the used car salesman. It's somebody that you don't feel like you can trust. It doesn't feel like somebody you can trust. Your incentives are not aligned. If you ever shop for a Tesla, it's more aligned. I can go on the online, put in my deposit. I can go and visit the studio. The price is always the same. I don't get a bunch of BS, right? Now, that's the honest look at CERT. It's full of friction, whether you like it or not. And that friction has a chance to lead people to not wanting those answers. Now, let's take an honest look at AI. Look at the prompt. Just take a look at the prompt. This is what we sound like. And think about it. We're able to speak in our natural language, right? Most of the real estate is actually for my answer. It's not people also ask. It's not related searches. It's not rich snippets. It's not site links. None of those things are the things that I'm looking at anymore. They're not there. I just get an answer. And then what I also love is how easy it is to do the follow-up searches. And I have an example about Banana Republic that I'll show you in a little bit. One of the things that I love is that it also gives me like little nudges to keep going. Search doesn't do that. I click on a page. Once I'm on the page, the only thing they want to nudge me for is to sign up for their newsletter. Here, they're saying, hey, there might be more here that we could help you with. And instead of me having to write some long query, I'm like, I'd like for you to do all three of those. Thank you very much. Right? And then our follow-ups, we speak in a different language when we talk to these, right? So then we get more answers and more answers. So who the heck wants to go back to this? All right, because I'm recording this, I get to do certain things live. So I typed in the word ethical genes, okay? You see how Banana Republic is here? Now, I want you to really think. When you think of the brand Banana Republic, do you think of ethical genes, ethical practices with genes? I know I don't. And that's not a knock. It's just not their brand. All right. So now look at this lovely stuff we've got here, right? We've got these weird related categories. Got to do that for the search engines, right? And we're going to put in this paragraph of crap down here. When in actuality, this is not what Banana Republic is about. So it's, to me, I mean, it's a hallucination. Let's be honest. Like, its SEOs have been able to use high-powered domains for a long time to make websites seem like they're about something they're really not about. Now, when I go over to ChatGPT and I say, I am looking for an ethically-minded jeans company. Look at all these lovely answers, right? I'm a big fan of Nudie. But look at all these answers, right? Notice how Banana Republic's not in these. And I don't think Banana Republic's ever going to be in these. You know why? Because they ain't about that life. It is okay that they're not about that life. I'm not making judgments here. But I think in an SEO world, many of us used to get traffic from things like this, that as our customers, if they choose to start to come over to ChatGPT and other places, they are not going to see those big brands that were maybe were kind of getting away with things that we overstepped a little bit. All right, let's get back to the presentation. All right, now this is Bing's trend over the last 15 years. 15 years. They were at about 3.5 here, 3.5 now after a big fall off. And maybe they'll come back. Maybe they'll just keep going up from like they have from 2001. But for the most part, I ain't buying it. Bing has had a 15-year chance to do this right, and they have not been able to break out of 3.5% in 15 years. And I'm going to tell you why that's important, because now we're seeing all these headlines about how like Bing plus ChatGPT search is how things are going to go. And I'm thinking, I'm not so sure. And I'm like, I got some really good examples of why. So if Bing and ChatGPT being the RAG function is the future, I think we got some problems. Now let's take an honest look at social. Because social is the thing that's growing. LinkedIn, Reddit, TikTok, WhatsApp. How many of us are in WhatsApp groups? Private WhatsApp groups with B2B business people asking questions and sharing information. So for so long, we use robots and algorithms to try to understand people's reputations. And you know what? Deep down, we prefer humans. Humans carry reputations better than websites do. You know, when Dale posts something, 81 people, humans, decided they were going to like it. They left comments. Some of them reposted it. And I then, by commenting, make his post more visible, which means I'm transferring parts of my reputation to my followers, to him. I like the reputation map better than the reputation graph a lot more than the link graph. And you know, some sites like WikiHow can rank for all kinds of weird words like Riz lines if you're trying to flirt on text or whatever the heck these kids do. But it's interesting how WikiHow's the kind of brand that we all know is kind of not great, right? You know, Rand comments on one of my blogs and gets half of the amount of likes that I got on mine, right? And how do those relationships happen? I think it's part of what happens here when we get in person. And this is a picture of Rand holding my child when my child was on a flight where I was working on a slide deck and he finished and my kid was being cranky and I needed to continue to work. Relationships, people, getting out there, coming to events like these, creating relationships with people will matter in a social growth world. You can hack your way to getting people to follow you. I'd rather just be a good human and see how that takes me. So chat, I believe, is better than Google by far. But what I really believe is that humans are better than chat. So I'm optimizing for chat and humans at the same time, which is what I've been doing back when it was Google and humans. I was always trying to thread that needle. Because fans are hard to disrupt, you guys. That's the thing. Fans can move from channel to channel to channel to channel. But if they're fans, they're still going to remember my brand. So now I'm going to get into the metric. So I've made my case. Hopefully I've started to make my case for the current state. Now I'm going to show you my metric. So in September, 1.3% of all my traffic was search, or was AI search. 77% was Google search. So you might think, Will, so you're just going to double down on Google. You would be absolutely wrong. Because it's not about the percent of traffic. It's about the slope of the growth. And really, I think for so many people, there's so much hype right now that the real two questions that I just need to answer are my customers there and how quickly are they moving? Those are the only two questions we really got to answer, right? And in The Sun Also Rises, I find this quote is just so powerful because what it's basically reminding us of is people go bankrupt gradually, then suddenly. A bunch of small things they overlook, small little decisions, and then one day something happens and they fall off a cliff. I believe that social has been the gradual thing where humans are trying to find places to get answers from other humans, and we have been ignoring that trend. And now AI is the sudden part that's going to cause everything to kind of fall over, but I think we need to pay attention to social. And you might hear that search is up. Rand has a couple of posts saying like, man, like the search is doing just fine, guys. Like, let's be careful about running too quickly on that. And he's right. He's got the research. He's got the data. But for me and with my website, 50% of my year-to-date AI traffic came in the month of September alone. And this is how November's looking. Perplexity drove me 25 visits in January. It's about to drive me 150 in November. ChatGPT, 14 in January, 300 in November. And remember, that new search GPT, whatever, that just launched. I think this is going to grow exponentially. So this is a great time to use ChatGPT 01 with all the reasoning to see the steps it's going through, to see how long it's going to take for the trend that you have to be a meaningful amount of your traffic. When I went through 01 preview, they did some math that I don't understand. I do. They said it's 22 months before it's 10,000 visits. Oof, okay. It gives me about 2 years before this is a meaningful piece of traffic coming to my business. Now, I've been tracking by MQLs, and at one point, a third of my MQLs that said they found me selected ChatGPT AI, and I made sure it wasn't the top answer. You know, I wanted to check for it to be my MQLs, not just my leads. And that's meaningful. Now, it's back down this month, I think, to like 10 or 12, but I had a spike in 1 month where it was 30. And when we think of this zero-click trend that Rand's talking about, Amanda's talking about, right? I'm also leaning into that as well. So I'm getting a lot of recognition in these platforms where I'm not getting the traffic back to my website. I just saw Rand present this and I'm like, man, he presented this ages ago and I never copied it. I think we all should copy it. He has a set of metrics that he is tracking that I think all of us should be tracking. You know, rankings and traffic used to be a really good leading indicator for how my business was going to do in terms of revenue. It is no longer the case. I have other leading indicators that I believe are much more aligned, and I've looked at the correlations between them with my revenue and my leads. So when SEO dropped 41% for me, I did what we would all do. I'd go and try to get more traffic. So what I would do is I would find blog posts and we'd optimize them. And in this instance, we increased the number of visitors to this post by about 20,000 people, which seems like a massive win, right? 20,000 extra people to your website is a massive win. But in terms of building fans, the seats were empty, y'all. I looked at this content, this one piece, that's just an example of one. Zero social shares, zero newsletter signups from that post, in spite of getting 38,000 people to it in a year, okay? But then when I looked at my revenue, I started realizing in my leads that the traffic to my homepage was a better indicator. This lining is much more correlated to my revenue, which you're about to see. And then when I think about what my homepage ranks for, sure, I have an occasional ranking like Interactive Agency Philadelphia. Most of my clients aren't in Philly, so those keywords really don't do anything for me. It's my homepage pretty much ranks for Sear Interactive. And who's going to Google that? Salespeople who are trying to do research on the business. People looking for jobs, potentially. Although I think they would probably type in careers or something, which would drop them on a different page. And people looking for a company. Those are the only three reasons why you should really end up to hire. Those are the only three reasons why you should really end up on my site. And in spite of my traffic being down 41%, when I compared the time frame over the other time frame, leads were flat, revenue's actually starting to come up. And it was me rolling up my sleeves and managing my own marketing that helped me to see that those metrics were not serving me. Mind you, when I had a whole big team, I was looking at traffic metrics. The minute I had to do this work myself, I started instantly realizing those were the wrong metrics to look at. And that's why I wrote this post. Now that post creates value, right? So that post where we optimize it, it does create value. I'm not saying the value is zero, but let's just say I'm like, it's a how-to post. It's pretty basic. It's pretty entry level. The person that would be typing that in probably doesn't have the budget to be able to, they don't have budget authority, okay? So I'm going to value visitors to that page at a certain amount. And with 39,408 visits this year, I'm going to value that at $9,000. Not bad. But now we're going to pivot into the social metrics. So that's the search metrics. Now let's pivot into the social metrics. Remember how LinkedIn's growing? Facebook groups are growing? WhatsApp is growing? Slack is growing? Reddit is growing? TikTok is growing? Remember that? In those places, humans share with other humans for the most part. And anywhere a human shares things with other humans, you're attaching your name and reputation with that. So I was able to 10x the traffic that I got from LinkedIn. 10x, in spite of my marketing budget being cut by 93% after the pandemic. And the only thing I can point back to is I started getting really serious in December about LinkedIn and just writing again. For so long, I didn't write all of my thoughts down. I didn't write great blog posts. I just had to get serious about that. And you can see I went from getting about 200 followers in the month of December to November so far. Yeah, November so far, I'm already at 800 and something added, which means I could almost 5x my followers from when I started taking it seriously till now. I also want you all to keep an eye on MS Teams, at least for me. If you're in B2B, this is an enterprise, it's an enterprise thing, right? So I'm looking consistently at MS Teams and who's sharing links to my business from MS Teams. I'm going to go into that a little bit deeper. Now, some of you might be mad and saying, Will, you're talking a lot about social and a little bit about AI, but you're not talking about SEO. And I'd say, yeah, I don't know. I'm looking to get people answers. I've really never been in the SEO business. I've always been in the answers business. I'm willing to lose traffic if I'm gaining attention and trust. My goal is to build fans because when I have fans, I have distribution. So this post has great value, sure, but I wrote content that had fans. It got 92% less visitors than the post I optimized from an SEO standpoint. So now we're talking about social content. It doesn't rank for nothing, right? So it got a lot less visitors, but it created 2.5 times the value. I took those low amounts of visits. I put my value per visitor on it. But then I looked at the newsletter signups that I was able to get, and I had a very different value. So for me, when I compare optimized how-to content, can I get more traffic? Yes. Does it build me fans? No. So therefore, I'll take a hit on the traffic and not go for 38,000 visits a year. I might go for 5,000 visits a year with something that creates fans. But there is a problem with these fans, is they give us hangovers. And if you're saying, well, Will, what do you mean by hangovers? It's that you have a spike, you do well, and the shit just doesn't sustain. So then you're back down in the doldrums again, trying to come up with another one. But let's remember there's a lot more value, and we all are going to have to consistently, and while people are moving, in my opinion, from search to chat-based search a little bit more, we're going to have to make sure that we are articulating our value at every point and squeezing every piece of value. So in this instance, do I rank for some keywords for that post? Yes, I do. We'll talk about it later. But the real traffic is coming from people sharing it. And then when I look at the refers, I start to see things to this post like Microsoft Teams, enterprises are sharing it. That's why I'm valuing those visitors at a lot more that hit this piece of content than my how to find an XML sitemap. I'm getting PR value. I'm building community. People even had meetings about this piece of content. Somebody somewhere linked to it in Google Calendar, and a bunch of people clicked on it. Not a bunch, maybe like 5. But then what happens with these old grayhead people that have been on stage forever? We have built-in distribution. I'm going to talk to you guys about that a bit later too. So then when I write something, I'm going to probably push and promote it because I'm passionate about it. For a long time, things were being written on my blog and the Seer blog. I was just like, not that passionate about. It's okay, but I wasn't going to share it. And fortunately or unfortunately, I have massive ability to distribute content. And remember, that piece of content I shared where the value was 20 grand, that's actually undervaluing the content, and I know it. I didn't count anything for any of the impressions we got, 81,000. I didn't count the fact that 583 people liked it. I didn't count the comments and the repost. I should be adding all of those onto that 20,000. It would probably be worth even more because there's actual real people behind these things, right? I can't tell you how many times I've ranked for a what is query and realized it's a 13-year-old doing a freaking book report. So the thing I love is that like ranking on Google means you know how to trick Google. And I'm not saying that there's not an algorithm at LinkedIn, because there is obviously. But you know what? The humans are the humans. And we're just going to have to start to rely on some of this experience. As data disappears and it gets harder and harder to track people, we still have to do marketing. We're still going to need to have a gut feeling about what's going to happen. And that means we're going to have faith, right? To me, fans are the future. I'm going to take the people I'm getting from SEO and try my ass off to turn them into fans. Because I think SMEs are going to crush content marketers in the future. So I wrote this post, SEO KPIs, why they won't work in 2024. And Forbes is outranking me, shocker, right? Freaking Forbes. Now let's look at their experience. Reminds you a lot of that friction from Google, doesn't it? Big ad, no answer yet, nothing to think about. We got Liron Hoori and Rachel Williams. Anybody following them? Anybody know them? They're beating me with all my fans, all my 24 years experience. I'm getting beat by them because they are on a strong ass domain and they did a lot of semantic SEO to put all the right things in the right places and to internally link and to do their table of contents. But then as you scroll down, you're like, oh, this is just lead gen, which is fine. But like, where's my answer? I'm trying to figure out my KPIs. Where's my answer? Give me something that's going to make me think. I'm not going to give you that first. We got to put our shit in the way. And you know, the only play for Forbes is SEO. Because there is no winning fans with that content. Who in here would share that content with somebody? But what's crazy is Forbes has more high quality links than I do to their post. Shocker. I thought that they were going to have less. Let me go ahead and walk you through it. So here are my friends at Forbes. Here's my post. I'm going to take the Forbes post. I'm going to drop it in. Now, my hypothesis when I had first done this was that I was going to crush them. Because I had all those human signals that theirs doesn't have. So I thought. All right. So they got 20 backlinks. I was like, they got 20 backlinks to this? Because I had 38. So I'm like, yeah, I'm crushing y'all. Right? But then when I looked at the quality of those backlinks, it told me a slightly different story. If I sort it by the page, I believe, page value, you could see MarketBeat, SEO Roundtable, BuzzSumo. And I'm like, how the heck did BuzzSumo? I obviously respect the heck out of BuzzSumo. Like, how the heck did they get, oh, this person that writes for Forbes also writes for BuzzSumo and is just linking out to all of her Forbes. So I wonder if Forbes is incentivizing Liron Hoori to put her content up in different places or to create certain types of relationships, you know, DM news, et cetera. I was like, man, that kind of stinks because I got my one link from Search Engine Land. But as you can see after that, it's just a bunch of mostly people that have copied stuff or, you know, it's pretty low hitting value. You know, a lot of zeros. Look at all those zeros. People just copying my stuff and whatnot, right? So technically, they've got better links than I do and more than I do. But as I dug in, there was a whole lot of like, oh, this person has written these pieces of content, and we're going to let them link over to them. So I don't know where the links are, but they were there at some point. I think there are these ones over here. They link out to her Forbes articles, right? So over and over and over again, she was promoting it that way. So I'm going, help me figure this out, right? I got people having meetings about my content. It's being shared. It's on search engine land. It's in Teams. It is being shared in real places with real humans. How are they beating me? It's getting real submissions. People are spending real time on this page. Those metrics just don't matter as much on Google. They got the bigger domain. Maybe they're doing something right semantically and I got beat. Well, you know what? I'd rather these numbers than whatever the heck they got. But this whole process caused me to do a pretty deep reflection on Google and the state of things. And as I started looking at clients and client results, I started saying, man, look at this page with all these top rankings from Forbes. All these number ones with this page. And I'm going, nobody would share that. That doesn't create links. It doesn't create fans. I'm not putting my name next to that and sending it out on social or email or Teams or groups that I'm in or Slacks or a Reddit. I'm not doing that. And that's where I'm starting to say, okay, so that's not going to earn me fans. But we still have this like AI concept that I want to get back to. Sorry, cut that part out. The sad truth about SEO versus social or AI versus social is that what we love is that we can optimize a post one time and it just oftentimes ranks and ranks and ranks. It's the gift that keeps on giving if traffic is your goal. Whereas this stuff sucks. It's harder. You're trying to win over human. But creating this trajectory is telling me that we're creating fans. The other thing that's playing to our favor, I believe, in terms of you growing your network, is that company LinkedIn pages are toast, right? So anytime you grow your personal following, you're bringing an asset to the organization that you're going to. You know, when I look at when Sears shares something, it has no distribution versus me. And I think that's why it's good for you as an SEO to start to expand the groups that you're in and the networks that you're in. And especially if they're in your vertical, oh, if you're an in-house SEO and you start to join groups that are in your vertical, I think your SEO capability plus your ability to understand the industry could be a real bonus. So let's talk about the first steps that we're going to take to start to turn these things around. So one, you got to get in groups. But if you're saying, well, where will, okay, I'm an SEO today. Where do I go to start to bridge these things? Well, you're going to have to start to fight against the hype of AI, but not in the way that so many people are doing it. I want you to fight to defend your current value today. That's why I think it's so important for you to listen to people like Dana DiTomaso, because what she's realizing is where analytics helps you tell your case and where with cookie deletion, ad blocking, etc., where you can't exact. I mean, I think it's so important for us to listen to what she has to say. Now for the presentation, I'm going to clean this slide up, but I wanted to get my recording done. So if you're starting off today, look at your homepage traffic, compare it to your revenue, okay? Look at your direct traffic. Find posts with link value. So do the old SEO stuff. If people are actually linking to a post that creates value, remember, because my post, the one that I showed here, it's got a couple links in here from a few folks. And one of them is on search engine land, right? Look at my referrals this year. You know, I got tons of referrals from places like HubSpot. If I drill into this quarter, SparkToro, right? So it's really important to be looking at those links and then deepen those relationships with people who already thought enough of you to link to your stuff. But that relationship connection, that to me is more about growing your social influence than just growing your SEO influence. The next thing I want you to do is to find something that's ranking well that you and I know is content marketer crap. It is semantic crap. It is not, I know this industry well stuff. It is sea of sameness. I'm kind of doing like, I'm trying to beat out the other content marketers. I want everybody in this room to pick one piece of content, flush it, and then go and talk to people in your company or in your industry about their opinions on it. Find those internal influencers, and I'm going to show you later how to find them and how to extract information from them. Go to Reddit. Look at the top Reddits ranking in your industry. Copy out some of those threads and paste them into ChatGPT and have it help you come up with really good questions for experts. Check out Andy Crestadina's, I'm going to link out to it, but check out his post around prompts for asking great questions. It's really, really, really strong. And again, I'm going to fix these slides. I just had to record this before I got on the plane because I won't have my good setup. I didn't feel like bringing all my lights and shit. All right. So now what you can do is ChatGPT advanced voice mode and Claude's ability to let somebody talk for 10 minutes. If I were you, once you get those great questions, I'm going to move from a content marketer that thinks in terms of semantics to a content marketer that thinks in terms of how do I ask strategic questions? And then how do I get those questions to people who are SMEs and know the space? And can I load them into ChatGPT and say, go for a walk, just talk into it. I've been using some tools like Vapy, which I'll share with you. It's not great, but what it lets me do is create a system prompt that then guides the user to answers that I want. So let's just say you're trying to write content built for a CMO audience and you ask somebody a bunch of questions. The problem is they may not be, if you explicitly say, oh, well, what would a CMO do? They might trip up on that. What ChatGPT is so great at is the creativity of when people give answers, if you're telling it, hey, this is where I want that person to land, it'll ultimately say, hey, that's a great answer you just gave me. What are three ways that a CMO might dot, dot, dot? So they'll try to guide the person to the end state of the content that you want. And if you give it the right prompt, I'm going to give you a bunch of them of my own, it'll keep them from accepting bad answers, which will mean they'll keep trying to get that person to get to where you want to get them to. But I would take Otter, Loom, MP3 exports. I don't care what it is. I just want subject matter experts talking in their own voice and giving me their own opinions. So that's also why it's so important for you to be in industry groups, because you'll start to see where people in the industry may not agree. And those might be great things for you to prompt and ask questions to somebody. You can get content out of people while they're walking their dog. And your job as a content marketer is to get these various opinions and bring them in, turn them into content. So when somebody gets it back, they're like, yeah, I'm approving this because it sounds like something I would say, versus stuffing a bunch of words in there and having them be like, you can't put my name on this. This is horrible, which then means you don't get their distribution. So for me, one of the things that I'm doing is I'm verticalizing my content a ton. I'm just starting this. So I am starting to verticalize my content because if you look at how the AI bots are, if you look at their prompting documentation, you'll see how they're training people to prompt them, okay? And I think that if you look at that close enough, you realize like I am a CMO of a blank kind of company. So I think it's going to become more important than ever, especially in B2B, to take content that has performed and find ways to chunk it down so that you are sending some signal that this content is specific for this type of use case. I think that's going to be important. All right. So now if you're saying, all right, well, there's a couple of ideas you just had there for the SEO and using AI to help me on the SEO side. Where do I go from an AI side? First thing is just benchmark where you are, right? So what we like to do at Seer with our AI tracker is we'll take a bunch of questions on people's minds. And we're not just looking for whether or not the brand is mentioned. What I actually love that our team did when they built this is for one of our clients in the auto manufacturing space, you can see that affordability of the questions that we have for affordability, their share of voice is only 20%. But for reliability, they're 45%. For fuel efficiency, they're 45%. So what I'm able to do is what we're using AI to do is to take all of our questions we're putting in, theme those questions in a set of defined themes, and then seeing how we perform across different themes. I think this is going to be the way. Imagine if my client says, hey, Will, why aren't we showing up as much in AI search for affordability type keywords? We can do the analysis and say, hey, you know what? Maybe we need to talk more about that in the public. We need to get the word affordability and affordability kind of similar kind of words closer to our brand, because across multiple generative AI engines, those things are distant. This is like that Banana Republic example. If the Banana Republic CEO comes to me or CMO comes to me and goes, why aren't we winning on eco-friendly anymore? We used to. And it's like, well, that's not really what your brand is putting out there in its press releases, in its commercials, in its programmatic buys, and in its mass media. So it's going to be hard for us to do that from an SEO standpoint without those things. The other thing I think that you should be looking at from an AI standpoint is what pages are people landing. Again, if I'm getting most of my traffic from ChatGPT to my homepage, that's good because people come to my homepage for jobs or to sell me, or because they're looking for an agency. I like seeing it go to my work pages and my case study pages. That's different than when it goes to a blog post. I'm not saying I don't want that content from the blog post or that traffic, but what I really want are the times where I am being recommended as an agency. So imagine over time, I don't care how small these numbers are compared to Google. I want to see, how does my work pages grow over time? How does my homepage grow over time? Now, if you got PPC data, my friends, ooh, put them into an SEO tool like Grape, a Google Sheet. You love being like, there's change, do the listic, blah, blah, blah. And you want to mansplain how AI that. You know why? I need to know, learn, and I'll give you that. I got food to put on the table. I can't talk to them about probabilistic, am I not showing up? Through these LLMs and learn how they're answering, I will improve upon this thing later, but that's why I have a video on how you can do all this stuff yourself. Now, I like to take Reddit pages. Actually, in this instance, I'm taking all the paid search terms that where Reddit was in the top 10 and a client. And for this client, you can see they've gone from about 8% of all their search terms. And when I look at how much they're spending on Google, sent to about 25% of their freaking conversions on those words, right? So what I'm saying here is that came on search terms where Reddit was in the top 10. We are almost now at 19% in a year. This is the kind of thing where Reddit threads. Is my brand important to know which models are training off of which sources? Because one of my hype are partnered with Reddit. If ultimately, my friends. All right, so now let's actually talk about optimizing for AI. I got them SAG list directories and press releases. So I asked ChatGPT, 5 agencies that are SEO and PPC on the G2 list. Then it gave me 21 agencies, top management companies. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, you know what it is? You know, you look at SEO agencies here, you're like, this is the kind of crap that Google's ranked. So when Bing is used as the rag, I'm going to write a post saying, here's 10 different great outer box. You're going to get that on Maple. You're going to get that on WebFX, right? Now, you promote is taking, so shout out to them. But you have 20, I can do, so I can now be in the sources and citation, writing that crap, right? My playbook is to, in their own tone, I'm telling you, it's going to be a great thing. I don't know how they tell people how to prompt. I think it's so interesting that they're showing this example. You are the CFO of a blank kind of company. We are in a board meeting. Those details help it to give better answers. Now, I'm going to leave you with some social stuff. Got short-term threat to search. Take. So every comeback loop. So when I have 800 value on it, which is a good start. But what if I use the tool like Phantom Buster to commented on them? What if I Clay to determine whether or not I'm able to help them with their problem or if we have content that connects with them? But our lead form, this is what now. Email address, get their LinkedIn profile, and see all the different things they asked or that I have posted. This helped me, and it's like, yeah, well, we looked at the things you liked. This is the ability to do that based on a keyword search. And of course, you can me up, actually liked. So this is what it's looking like now, which is just in the social ponds to then get this. At the end of the day, I'm just doing shit humans love. I'm using consistent feedback loop about what humans love so much more than what Google loves. And then I'm going to go find where they should. It's not going to be easy. People will tell you that I'm on it in a profile of yours on a Slack group. Click that you what you now have. You can then go back and find out what the session names are coming in as. Microsoft Teams, if you look for things that also have a web version of their app, you might be able to get some of the traffic that way back to understand what pages are people landing on and what do they care about the most. So I'm aiming for career insurance. I'm going to leave